We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into the OBR Film Breakdown. It is a draft day edition, Thursday, April 25th. Obviously, this is before the draft. We will also be checking in after the first round of the draft. A lot of fun stuff going on today. Really an NFL holiday. We're excited to be here. It's me and Andrew Spade. We have, a lot of stuff up on the website. Andrew did a fantastic deep mock draft that we're going to talk about here in just a minute. We have some critical questions around the draft from Brad Ward. We have Jack Duffin's finally kind of put out his own mock draft that he's been building toward with his big board and different things around the guardrail. So that's available. If you are interested in the contract details of Jermaine Ifedi, you can find that as well. So listen, a lot of stuff going on. I know Cody Sook put out six combinations of picks at 54 and 85, kind of going through different names and different combinations you can find on the day two selection board. We'll have a much clearer picture of that for you later on tonight when we record and into your episode you'll listen to tomorrow morning. But this first round, Andrew, is still no Browns. The last one will, you know, I can't say that with certainty. You never know if they want to deal a pick for a player again when they're in win now mode. But we feel like we're going to get back to a normal sort of structure with the draft next year where we get to have more of the first round banter. But it is nice to go into the first round a little bit where you're just like, I just kick my feet up and see what teams do and evaluate those and maybe make a couple bets. It does make it a little more fun. Whereas when you have a first round pick, which we haven't seen for a while, there's a little bit of pressure there and you're kind of nervous about who's going to be there when they pick and stuff like that. So last one of these to enjoy without any like home baked pressure.
Yeah, I think I would take the pressure honestly, but yeah, you're right. I mean, there is a level of being a, it's a little bit like when the Browns have a bye week during the season, right? And you know, like you can just enjoy the football. There's no sort of more emotional stress that comes with having to like really lock in on your team. So yeah, tonight for us is almost recreational. And then we'll start to think at the end of the first round, kind of about players that are falling that might be available when the Browns pick tomorrow. But of course that's a long way off from now. And it's too many picks to get through between now and then. So it's hard to know for sure even who's going to be there. So you don't even really start thinking about that until what, pick 28, something like that tonight.
Yeah. Which I believe is Buffalo, which is probably going to be in that run of maybe late receivers that we see or tackles. I don't know. There are so many teams coming in late with like offensive tackles of interest and offensive linemen in general. I've seen some drafts that popped up today, some of the bigger minds that do this for a living across the league with upward of 10 offensive tackles taken in the first round. Not impossible to see that happen, but there's going to be a run on one of those two premium positions, wide receiver or offensive tackle, that's going to leave us kind of altering who we think is going to be available later on when the Browns get up at 54 or whenever they ultimately select. So listen, let's go through your mock. And then I put together something this morning based on some of the feelings I've had. And these are not, I'm speaking for you a little bit, Andrew, but I think you're doing this one a little bit more predictive in terms of what the Browns, you think the Browns will do based on what's available on the board. And I'm interested to see what you came up with. Let's talk through it.
Yeah, so my initial plan for these had been to kind of just explore different scenarios, different players that might be available to the Browns. We're trying to take a little bit of more of an educational angle in terms of helping people understand who might be available for the Browns at 54. now that it's, you know, draft day, you can be a little bit more specific about how you actually see things playing out. And so I tried to just do one that I thought more closely mirrored what I thought the team might decide to do. And I think there's really kind of two options. I talk about it in the article. One path is if a wide receiver that they really like falls to them at 54, then I think they could just stick and pick at 54.
Right.
If the sort of, I think I would say like second tier of wide receivers, which includes Keon Coleman, Ricky Pearsall, Ladd McConkey, Xavier Worthy, names like that. If those guys are all gone, right, then I think the Browns have an incentive to try and trade back a small amount and pick up another pick. I have them picking up a fourth round pick from the Texans. Ironically, this is the final pick that the Browns traded for Deshaun Watson. 123 was one of the originally traded picks. And so in the process, they add another pick in a sort of a soft spot for them, because currently they've got that empty spot from 85 to 156. And so we've got them picking up an extra one and moving back five spots. And then my first pick is Karan Amagaji from Yale, who I think I really think is their target kind of at 54 and below, if that makes sense. So I think they could stay and pick him, but I also think if they could, that's a player they feel like they could move back a little bit and still end up with.
That's probably the most popular name and realistic name to sort of be available. I think the other most popular name, which I went at pick 54, I sat still at this spot and took Kingsley. Again, I saw him kind of creeping into some of these end of the first round mocks. He has been
more and more. Yeah.
Andrew, I don't know though if I've seen, and I've said this maybe in the last few days with various people I've talked to, but like his range of where he's at on big boards is crazy. Like some folks have him in the triple digits, and then some folks have him creeping into the first round. There's always this every year where there's somebody a team values in the first round or whatever, and you're like, I can't believe that guy went that high. I think last year was probably Jack Campbell. Not that we didn't think Jack Campbell was a good player, just didn't see him going. I think what he ended up going like 18, top 20 or something,
right?
Like that.
Right, he was top 20, yeah.
So there's always every year a player extended, overextended from like what the mock consensus boards are by like 20 to 25 picks. Perhaps that's Kingsley, but again, I think it depends on where some of those slots are. But Karan, like you said, is the right fit of like second wave of tackles that the Browns, even if they slid down a little bit, could select. So I think that makes a lot of sense there.
But
so go ahead.
I don't think he makes it 85 is the crucial point.
It's risky. You would not feel good about it.
Just because what you were talking about before with some of the teams at the end of the first round, if they go wide receiver, for example, the Chiefs, the Bills,
right?
If a wide receiver falls to them, then now they have a chance to kind of come back and get a tackle at the end of the second. I don't think Amagaji makes it through that. And then also the pile of teams at the top of the third round who need a tackle as well. You're talking about Washington. I think the Jets are in there if they don't go tackle earlier in the draft. So, yeah, I just don't think that straddle between 54 and 85 is too big for you to assume that he's going to be there. I think his upside as a developmental prospect is too high for him to be a mid-third rounder. I just think some team is going to think, let's take a swing on him and see if we can develop him into a starting left tackle.
Too much with the body style, the way he looks, the way, you know, all of that. I mean, there's concerns about level of play, as there always are. He didn't test, which, again, not the most ideal thing. But that's why a guy like him is available in the sort of second, maybe even beginning of the third round. But you're right. Just because teams may, you know, select a tackle – not to select that tackle in the first round, they're going to circle back and make that happen a little bit later. So maybe your hope is that the tackle run in the first round does happen, and then you have a little bit more of a window of opportunity here. But then again, it's like if the Jets, or, you know, we know that the Commanders aren't going to take one. I could even see New England being interested in a tackle at some point in the second round. There's going to be a run on that group in the second round. It's just a matter of if the Browns are in the thick of it or they can kind of hold steady. So, all right. Good stuff. Your second pick, did you trade out of this one? Because I know I did, but I'm curious what you did.
No, I stuck here. And actually, this is one where when I was looking at it, I was thinking I might have to trade up a little bit. In a lot of these, I end up having to trade up a little bit to get Trey Benson. But, you know, because he tends to go in the late 70s, early 80s, at least on the PFF simulator. So I was able to hold at 85 and get Trey Benson. This is, I think, probably the area in which my thinking about the Browns draft has changed the most. And it's really spurred on by the Nick Chubb restructure, mm-hmm. the way they've been talking publicly about where he's at in his rehab. I think if there's a player of Benson's quality available in the third round, it makes a ton of sense to draft a player that you would feel comfortable with taking 300, 400 snaps for you this year. Because I think they have available snaps in the running back room. I really do. I think when the assumption was that Nick Chubb was going to be back maybe week 5, week 8, something like that, you can cobble it together for a month or so. But I don't think if he truly is going to be like a December edition, which is, I feel like, where we think things are right now, Jake, I don't know that you can hang on with Deontay Foreman, Jerome Ford, and Nyheim Hines until December if you're trying to win the division. You know, if they're not a contending team, if they're kind of on the fringe, sure, roll with it. But for where they're at, so it's changed my thinking. Plus, a player like Benson, if Chubb is back, and say they end up, he comes back, he's healthy, and then he's back next year, they extend him. Benson and Chubb is a great 1-2 combination. They have very complementary skill sets.
Yeah, I'm with you. If he's available, I mean, it feels like Trey Benson's going to be one of those. If there's a run in the second round, probably looking at Brooks, Benson. The third guy is a bit more of a toss up, but like those are the names that scream second round because there's not a ton of them, right? So totally understand that. I actually moved out of this spot because the Chiefs got hungry to come up. They didn't take a wide receiver in the first round, so they ended up coming up and taking wide receiver at 85. So they offered 95 and 131. So I gladly accepted that, moved back 10 spots and took Ben Sennett, who I think we both love. We don't have to go through this again because we've talked about him extensively, the tight end out of Kansas State. I know Corey loved him. We had him on the other day. I know there's been plenty of smart media folks that love him. I know Dane's a little less high on him, but again, pick 95, I think it's a really sound pick for where their offense is going, and I think the value sits pretty healthy in a good spot right there. So I take Ben Sennett and then gain pick 131, and at 131 I wanted to go running back. I wanted Marshawn Lloyd, but he had already been selected, so I went to the next guy up on my preferential list of running backs. So I took Audric Estime, which again, I think is a good fit for what they would need this year. And Andrew, you talk about pairing up with Nick Chubb for the future. I mean, Estime's got some Kareem Hunt to how he plays the position. And I think that's why I'd be drawn at that spot, 131, which I, again, gained a selection there to go running back, best available on the board for me. And I think Estime's probably gone a little sooner than 131 is my hunch on this draft. But if he's sitting there and he's a 20-year-old sort of power back that can make people still miss in space a little bit, maybe not the top-end speed you were hoping for, but a lot of traits that you really like. And I feel like getting Estime there at 131 is a good hit. So I'm with you on running back. I feel less convinced than ever they need a wide receiver, Andrew. And I feel like though they do really need to address running back with a pick at some point. So hopefully they're in the mold of you and I's thought process here, yeah, which is early enough.
I agree on both of those. And I do agree with the thinking that if there's not a sort of value, maybe second round type player available at 85 for them, a trade back there does make a ton of sense, because I think they could stick in the third round and probably pick up a fourth rounder, which again, as I mentioned before, they don't have. So it makes a lot of sense, because I think when you do a bunch of these drafts, you get a real sense of the tiers and how that falls. And
yeah,
if you go from 85 to 156 without making a pick, you miss like two full tiers of players. They're not available to you. So one way you can get into those is if you drop back a little bit, if the guy that you don't like is there, and then you pick up that pick. So I did it at 54, you did it at 85, but it's the same result essentially, yeah, right? Like you're adding a fourth rounder and adding access to another tier of player that you kind of like don't have access to right now. Because Estime is certainly not going to be there at 156. I think we feel pretty confident about that. But
yeah,
I really like that combo of Sennett and Estime. I think that the tight end is the sort of, you mentioned wide receiver not being as much of a pressing need. I agree with that. I think it's the thing that I really struggle with is I don't want to see them add a guy just to add a guy.
That's exactly my point. Once those tiers are gone, I'm not chasing somebody right. here that I don't think is necessary.
Exactly. At this spot. I, I'm not into like reaching for a Jacob Cowing out of Arizona, right? Right. Or these guys that, you know, a guy that I saw a lot that was available that I would consider a little bit of a chase is Roman Wilson.
Yeah.
Because it's just like a little bit duplicative of skill sets they already have on the team. Like, I think the Jeudy move allows you not to have to chase. And so if somebody's, again, if somebody's sitting there at 54 or somebody slips to 85, pull the trigger, I'm on board. But I think that there's more, what I guess I would say is that there's more reasonable depth at other positions, tackle, tight end, and running back, where you can let the board come to you at those positions a little bit, where it feels like, and this might just be a media creation too, right? It might be that, you know, I heard some people talking about A.D. Mitchell is off some boards. So does it in fact happen that like there's five wide receivers that go in the first round and then there's a bunch sitting there at 54 and we're in that situation we've been in with the Browns where it's like, oh, they got their choice of Keon Coleman and Ladd McConkey and one other guy. And then they pick, you know, a tackle or they trade down or whatever. And we can't believe it. Right. Like
that's been the past. Like there's been those wide receivers sitting there and we can't, there was a couple of years ago where they traded out of the Emerson spot where there was somebody sitting on the board that we were, maybe that was Pittsburgh's Pickens. Like, I think that was the guy, there was somebody else there at that spot.
I'm going to look it up, but I think Pickens was the main guy there that everybody wanted.
Yeah. There was somebody else there too, that I can't get, maybe I can't remember, but then there was like Marvin Mims last year. There's been, but they also made the Elijah Moore move. There've just been those situations where wide receivers slip a little further. And like you said, I can't remember if it was A.D. Mitchell. I saw you say somebody flagged some medical stuff. I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Brian Thomas that had some medicals come up.
Yeah, he's got a shoulder.
Knocked him down some draft boards or completely off. I can't remember if it was completely off. But this is where the pieces of the puzzle that we don't know start to like, why is this happening? Because I will go back again to the one that made the least amount of sense, which was the day of the draft, the Browns in 22, where like a lot of people were pegging them to take Perrion Winfrey. And then like all of a sudden that guy's there in the fourth round and you're trying to figure out why. And DeJuan Jones was last year's example. The Winfrey
thing doesn't. And there's one this year too.
There is. That one doesn't work out. The DeJuan Jones thing so far has been a nice surprise, but there's always these pieces of the puzzle that you start to like people, it trickles out, right? It starts to, because we don't want, like the guys covering this full time don't want to be those who are crushing prospects before the cycle's really taken a hold. Like you don't want to do that too early because it can make you look bad and not reflect well on getting some of the agents to talk to you or deal with you later. But when the draft starts happening, then you start to hear these things creep out a little bit that make you raise your eyebrow or understand the thought process a little bit more. Yeah.
So in 22, it was John Metchie is who the Texans traded up for. And then you also had George Pickens, Alec Pearson, Sky Moore on the board.
Yeah, so those were names people wanted.
We were very in on Sky Moore. Ended up being, I think, right of the Browns to not pick him. Obviously, the George Pickens thing is what it is. I think that's still a ticking time bomb, to be honest. But yeah, the Browns have shown the ability in the past to kind of ignore the people that we think have fallen into their lap a little bit, quote unquote, because they're, as you just mentioned, there are reasons why these guys often are available. You know, in a surprise spot. It's just how it tends to work out in the draft. And then you find out either during the draft or after the draft that there were concerns that hadn't been made public.
Right. Exactly. All right. So your next pick, you've named two or three. I think you've only named two.
Named two. Yeah. So my next pick, speaking of, this is more public concerns, but they pick up 123 in that trade down with the Texans. And so this is where I have them picking up Tavondre Sweat. And it's not a pick that I like, but again, I'm trying to predict a little bit of what's going to happen. And I think if he's there in the fourth round and Andrew Berry has a way to pick him, he's going to pick him. Like, I don't think it's particularly an argument to make, because I think he understands the bet that Andrew Berry is making is, and you mentioned it already, if Perrion Winfrey's off the team in 2 years or a year, essentially, but DeJuan Jones ends up being I think he was playing at a borderline Pro Bowl level last year before he got hurt, right? Like, maybe say at least an league average starter. That overall, for two fourth round picks to get a starter out of that, is in the aggregate, you win, right?
It's a huge win. Getting anything relevant. Fourth round and beyond is like, you're taking flyers, man. If you get any answers from the fourth round or beyond, you're feeling great. I mean, I understand exactly why they do it, and I understand exactly why they go after Sweat. Like, if Jermaine Burton was there, I think that they'd be going after him. I don't see a world in which you get to the fourth round and the Browns having a chance to pick somebody whose talent doesn't meet the threshold of who they are from a reputation standpoint, then you're definitely going to see them in the mix for some of those guys. So yeah, you might not love the idea of Sweat, but if you're banking on this guy falls to the fourth, his attitude changes, he has a wake up call about how the world perceives him as a football player, and you have some, you know, again, I don't want to too far cart horse with Dewan, but like, you have some quality results that he's shown in his first year and hopefully can carry on. It's just smart business, for lack of a better way to say it, to take advantage of some of those. There are going to be win frees, but that's sort of the gamble that you're playing there. So I wouldn't love it, but again, like, if you're trying to create a better version of Siaki Ika, I can be behind that. I mean, yeah. I think that they could use somebody a little more run stuff dominant, but that, you know, that comes with a lot of homework, Andrew, a lot of homework, and we'd have to see if their homework hits. So we're probably both picking 156 now. I took Cedric Gray, the linebacker in North Carolina. I couldn't believe he's there. Don't think he will be there again on draft night, but if he's there, a really fun linebacker, speedy linebacker that is a tackle producing machine. And I think that like a linebacker can be a nice mesh spot there at 156. There's some guys I like the Jordan McGee's of the world. There's some of those players that mesh really well with a spot I think has an outside chance of being on the field if the right one is sitting there. But it's a reminder, 156 is a little later in the draft than you want to admit, because it's only the fourth Brown selection, could be only the third Brown selection in this entire thing. But ultimately, I go Cedric Gray. I feel pretty good about it. There was some consideration for wide receivers, but again, I don't like, if I'm not, and I don't have enough information on some of these guys personally, but if I'm not in love with the wide receiver, I'm just not going to make that selection, largely because I think the Browns have enough wide receiver talent to get by as is and even thrive. And ultimately, I think that they're trying to figure out who's going to be here next year. And there's a chance that they could take one in the first round. I know we've talked about that a little bit, but it's like every year there will be wide receivers available to take that you think can make some sort of impact, and having, you know, a bit more premium selection equity is good for that situation. So I go Cedric Gray.
Yeah, I it makes a ton of sense. I give credit to our colleague Pete Smith, because he wrote an article about this last week that was basically making that argument that the Browns are in a position where they don't need a wide receiver, so it might make sense to wait one more year on that, especially if they feel internally pretty confident that they're going to be able to extend Amari Cooper. If you've got Cooper and Judy locked up for the next few years, you don't really need to invest your top pick. Whereas I think, you know, the way that Jack Duffin, our other colleague at the OBR, has phrased it is, you'd rather extend Cooper than Jed Wills, right? So if you've got a chance to get a tackle to replace Jed Wills and then extend Cooper, that's a better combo than trying to force a pick at wide receiver and then not being able to add a tackle to the team. So I agree with you. And I think, like we said, we keep saying, don't force a wide receiver pick. And I think that's where I've landed too. For me at 156, it's Jaheim Bell, the tight end from Florida State.
Love it.
It's a player that I keep coming back to in this spot. It's a fit and a time in the draft that makes a ton of sense to me, because I think the player that I feel that I come back to here is Chig Okonkwo, who's with the Tennessee Titans, right? Like, he is not a true difference-making tight end. I don't think he ever will be, but he's a fun piece for them. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see Brian Callahan get more out of him, frankly. But I think that's the type of player that the Browns haven't really had in their tight end room for the past few years. And I think that's the player that they will want now that they're switching this offense to more spread, more motion, a player that can truly line up basically anywhere across the football field is going to help them be more scheme diverse, motion, deception, formation changes, all that stuff, all those buzzwords, right? That's a player like Bell helps them do that.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break, come back from break, do our final three selections quickly, and then talk about some like gambling props we may like tonight is an entertainment piece of the entire first round operation. So we'll be right back.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The OBR is proudly sponsored by Game Time Ticket App. When you're buying those tickets and it's the last minute, you don't have to be stressed out. You can go to GameTime.co or use the Game Time app to make those last minute ticket decisions in the best possible way with a fast and easy way to buy tickets for sports, music, comedy, and theater near you. The app does a fantastic job of finding opportunities near you for events, both, like I said, sports and otherwise. We have a comedy show that we found recently with the best price that we could possibly find using Game Time. Great seats. You can scout out the seats, have a great experience, and get the image of those seats all within the app or online, whatever you would like to do. So Game Time is the fast and easy place for those last-minute ticket deals. So take advantage, snag your tickets with Game Time, and avoid the stress. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the promo code OBR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create that account, use the promo code OBR, get $20 off your first purchase. Download Game Time today. Last-minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a lowly podcaster like me, the world is starting to understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. The NFL has been placing a larger emphasis in this area, especially that mental well-being. The Browns are leading the charge in this as well, trying to get their players to the right physical and mental peak every day, and that's what Unified Healing System is trying to do, and they're a proud sponsor of the OBR Film Breakdown. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or EE Systems. If you haven't heard of EE Systems yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're in Cleveland or Columbus like me, or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access is easy and affordable. If you're interested in experiencing the EE system for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/OBR. Again, that's unified with a YD, unifiedhealing.com/OBR, to learn more and find a center near you. A reminder, no material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system. All right, Andrew, I'm going to give you my final three picks, and then we'll go to you for your final three picks. You don't have to explain these all too much. These are picks in the 200, which are ultimately like $1 scratch-off tickets. Just how it is. I could not believe that Dominique Hampton was here, the safety out of Washington. You watch his film, I see a guy who's every bit worth the consideration of a top-five safety, which, again, in this class is probably putting him more in like the fourth round. So somebody sitting here at 206, who I think, and I even believe Dane has him as a fourth-round grade or fifth-round grade, like, this is just a home run to me. I want to continue to not... You know, this is a top player available situation. I'm not necessarily hunting safeties, but I think you can't just rest on the idea that you have safety solved in perpetuity when you definitely have some decisions to make about a lot of guys into the future. So we go Dominique Hampton, a safety out of Washington, 206, 227. I'm looking for guys who can play, be diverse, play on the interior, try to find somebody who fits into what the Browns ultimately want to do with their O-line. So I go Dylan McMahon out of North Carolina State, who's labeled as a center, but I think can play a little bit of guard as well. And then at 243, I took a wild card pass rusher, Eric Watts, out of Connecticut, because I think maybe he gets vouched by his former offensive coordinator now on the Browns staff, and he can play a little bit. So again, those guys, last two guys are 23, a little older, but I don't really care at that point anyway. So yeah, that's how we wrap up my selection. So Kingsley Suamataia at 54, moved back to 95, Ben Sennett, the tight end out of Kansas State. 131, Audric Estime, Notre Dame running back. 156, Cedric Gray, North Carolina linebacker. 206, Dominique Hampton, the Washington safety. 227, Dylan McMahon, North Carolina State center. And 243, Eric Watts, Connecticut edge. There we go. All right, your last three picks and then round it out.
So I actually only have one pick, because I neglected to mention this. In the trade up or the trade down with Houston, I spun them back that last seventh rounder to balance things out. And then I did a small trade up to get ahead of the Bengals for Jaheim Bell, like I think eight spots with the Broncos. And so I threw them.
That is the more realistic path, what you're doing there, than what sitting here and making three 200 plus picks. So I
right. And that's what I was trying to, whether it's not, I don't know if it'll be those trades, but I do think that the main purpose for those late round picks for the Browns this year is trades. I don't think they're going to stick and pick in at three plus 200 picks. It just does not make sense for where their roster is.
It does not.
We've talked about this for a month now, Jake. Their roster is full essentially before the draft. So trying to find room for the guys at the end of the draft, it doesn't make sense. So I think they will involve those in trade. So I was trying to kind of capture that through the process. So I did stay at 206, and I picked Satoa Laumea, the tackle, but I think he's going to play guard in the NFL from Utah. Okay. Because I think if you can end up with two developmental prospects on your offensive line, I think that's where they want to be, because I think they have future needs at both tackle and guard. So, and I like that, the value there, certainly. I don't know that that's a player that will be available at 206, but we'll see.
No, I love it. Again, it paints a better picture for how they'll use their capital and being aggressive and whatnot. And if they don't find the right opportunity to move up where a team is actually interested in those 200-plus picks, they can obviously push those into the future. I don't think they're making three. So, yeah, read yours real quick, Andrew, if you can.
Yeah, so I slid back a little bit to 59. Karan Amagaji from Yale is my pick there. Then stuck at 85, Trey Benson. With the pick that I picked up in the trade down 123, I drafted Devondre Sweat in the fourth round. Small trade up to get Jaheim Bell from Florida State in the fifth. And then Satoa Laumea in the sixth at 206, the tackle slash guard out of Utah.
There you go. There's our final mock drafts. The last time you hear us projecting picks, especially.
Well, we'll probably do a mock tonight. Right,
well, after the first round. I was going to say, without clarity of what players will be available. So, yeah, I will enjoy doing these a little bit more when we know who's sitting at the top of these best available scenarios, because that's just such an easier path to creating a realistic outcome. So we'll be excited to get into that after the first round tonight. So check that out. Want to close with some gambling props a little bit here. So the things that it depends where you are, state to state, it doesn't allow you to do certain things. Like Ohio only allows you to really gamble on like picks 3 through 10, and then they have some over unders on positions. So Andrew and I thought these three positions, cornerback under, so under 5.5 corners, the odds aren't great. They're only giving you minus 550, which isn't good. But if you want to just make some easy money, I have a hard time seeing six corners get into the first round, Andrew. So you're talking like the obvious ones are Cooper DeJean. You're talking Kool-Aid McKinstry. You're talking, and again, this isn't DBs. This is just specifically corners. So it makes it a little bit easier to sort of peg where some of these guys can ultimately end up going. But if you're looking again, like trying to hone in on the five specific corners that could ultimately go. Terrion Arnold's a guy. Cooper DeJean is a guy. You'll see Quinyon Mitchell. So that's three obvious ones. So Kool-Aid McKinstry's your fourth. And then like, who's your fifth and sixth starts to become really tricky. You would have to see some very big upsets late in the first round to get there. So we liked corner under 5.5 corner selected in the first round. Offensive lineman, and now this is not tackles alone. This is all offensive linemen. So like Zach Frazier is a guy, Jackson Powers Johnson, the center market, which has some guys who could be fringe first rounders. Not really a guard in this one that is like up toward the top. Christian Haynes can play, the UConn kid, but ultimately I think it comes down to tackles. You're talking about 10 tackles going in the first round. Hard to see. It's possible, but it's hard to see that many going that like 10 tackles alone, but you add in the centers. I think it's very possible. So we like the over 9.5 offensive linemen at -192. That's one that we think is interesting. And then we think defensive linemen under 6.5, and this is edge and defensive tackles combined under 6.5, gets you a -230. So you're just talking about whether Chop Robinson and Darius Robinson both get into the back half of the first round, because there's only two D tackles, and you're talking about the top of the edge group is Dallas Turner, Liatu Latu, and then Jared Verse. So you're talking about that's just five. So you have to add another. So the odds here is can it just be one of Chop Robinson and one of Darius Robinson. And that's, to me, a pretty easy path to keeping that under, and you're only given a -230 odd there. So those are the routes that we would go based on those positional ups and downs. But Andrew, you know, people who are outside of Ohio have some more fun gambling opportunities, which I think you have a couple maybe.
Yeah, so there's a few that I think are really interesting. One that I really like is I'm looking at FanDuel top four wide receiver picks exactly. And so the curveball here is, you mentioned earlier, Brian Thomas, maybe shoulder issue. I've seen Field Yates mock this morning has Xavier Worthy going to the Jaguars in the mid. I've seen like two or three mocks today that have Xavier Worthy going to the Jaguars. So I don't know if there's actual smoke there, but you can get that at +550 for Worthy to be the fourth wide receiver off the board.
That's a pretty good number.
When you've got those long odds, you can take a little shot at it. You don't have to put $5 on it and it returns something. So that's one that I think makes a ton of sense. The first offensive lineman drafted market is really interesting to me, because it was really long odds for Joe Alt, but now it's almost equalized. So Alt is -170. J.C. Latham is up to +105, because I think there's a lot of talk that he might be the guy for the Chargers now. So if you feel like you have a good inkling on that one way or the other, I think there's some value there if you want to try and still get plus money on J.C. Latham. That time seems to be running out. And then there's just a few draft position ones. You know, I think it's juiced, but A.D. Mitchell, there's been a lot of talk about him falling out of the first round. His over-under is 27.5, I think, and the juice is on the over, but not terrible. It's -170.
I wonder how many teams are scared away of the diabetic stuff there.
Right.
I think that's a
question. Brian Thomas is all the way down to 21.5 now. It's another one, and the juice is pretty even there. So those are two that I think. The other one that has changed a lot, I don't know that I love the value here, but Johnny Newton from Illinois is all the way down to 29.5. You know, now that's a player that I don't think that we have thought that the Browns would have any chance at. But if he falls out of the first round, Jake, there has to be at least some thought to the idea of getting into the 40s to get what I consider to be a true difference-making defensive tackle.
Because he can rush the passer, right? He's maybe not great at anchoring double teams the way Byron Murphy is, but I want a guy who can get after the quarterback. I have a hard time seeing him slip past like Miami. Some of these teams, like Miami, has to recreate some defensive interior. They're not good enough there. And that first round being right away able to replace or somewhat replace Christian Wilkins is like, to me, it just makes too much sense. So that's a very interesting one. Any more you wanted to add?
Yeah, just one more quick. Xavier Legit is over under is 33.5, and there's positive juice on the under, and I've seen a lot of him sneaking into the bottom of the first round today. So I don't know if it depends on how you like these players ultimately, right? Like, you know, some of the players that I tend to like more, you know, I think Amarius Mims, just because of like the athleticism. I think both quarterbacks are worth a shot just because of the, you know, how quarterback works in the NFL. So I there's none that I feel super strongly. The one that I did have that is not available anymore at the same value is Theo Johnson was +1200 yesterday to go as the second tight end. And Charles Robinson, who I've talked about on this pod before, I really respect as an insider, put it in pretty strong terms that he expects him to be the second tight end drafted. So I got in on that. It's down to 250 now. So still some plus value. You worry about Ben Sinnott, obviously. You worry about Jatavion Sanders, but Robinson is a pretty dialed in insider. So I took a risk there. So if Theo Johnson comes off the board in the second round, drinks are on me, Jake.
+1200 there, and then it moves to, what'd you say, 200?
Yeah, plus 250, I think, now.
Yeah, so. that's a big swing. So maybe a lot of people were rushing to that one, and they caught a smell of it a little bit there. That's fascinating. It would be an upset. But that's what happens. This every year, there's something crazy. And Leggett getting into the first round would not be crazy based on some of the history of guys. Like, teams do not tip their hand. This is something we keep seeing come up more and more. There's less certainty on the connection of teams and players than we've ever seen on this stuff. They're just the way that the ages are working and all of that stuff, like, it's being noted from people that have done this for a living for a while, that there's just less leaks than we've ever seen before. And I think that it matters to when we talk about the consensus players going way up the board out of nowhere. It's because teams don't know the connection. So somebody like Leggett, right? It's very possible, is what I'm saying. And then, did you see, I got to ask you before we split, did you see the clip of the new Panthers head coach? I think it's Dave Canales, right? Kind of trying to cover his tracks with potentially telling Leggett that he would be the 33rd pick if he's there. That was one of the more awful, awkward moments of a guy trying to cover his tracks I've seen in a while. And I'm like, if I'm a Panthers fan, I'm a little uneasy about the way he handled that, because it just didn't feel very genuine to me.
Agreed. 100% agreed. I think he maybe got caught with his hand in the cookie jar a little bit. And, you know, I'm sure he'll learn from that experience. I think it's funny because the draft is great because of the stuff that is not the football stuff, right? Like, because none of this is actual football.
Yeah.
We're talking about players that won't play until September. And even then, sometimes they won't be ready to play until next year, especially for the Browns, right? Some of these guys that they draft are not going to be on the field this year. And so you're not really talking about football. You're talking about all the stuff that surrounds it. And I that's one of the reasons I enjoy the draft so much, is because you see the personalities and the way these teams operate, right? Like, how the Giants are trying to approach this quarterback thing is really interesting. What the Vikings do with two first round picks, but no real clear path to get up into the top five. So it's going to be a super interesting night. We should mention, Jake, that we're going to be live from 8 o'clock tonight on the OBR streaming network. So YouTube, Twitch, whatever you use, check us out, join us. It's our draft coverage, I think, has been one of the best things, if not the best thing, that we do at the OBR, because we get a bunch of fun people in a room and we just talk about the draft as it happens. It's like you're watching it with us. And I think we do a really good job of keeping it fun, but at the same time informative. And if something weird happens, there's nothing better than like seeing the reaction of a bunch of people kind of losing their minds at what the Browns or another team has done that just kind of blows your mind.
Yeah, and we'll be live all weekend, and I've tried to, hopefully you guys have heard us talk about that this week on the pod. It'll be an entire draft bonanza where the goal is here to be up and at 'em and live with different folks on from the staff in every single hour of this thing. So we appreciate you being here, stopping by for this episode of the OBR Film Breakdown. A lot of good stuff here, a lot of good draft insight, all the above, the content of our final mocks, and then some gambling stuff here. And it's been a really fun lead up to the whole draft in general. So we appreciate you guys hanging out with us. Rate and review the pod if you can, and check back with us first thing tomorrow morning. We will have first round reaction that is unique to what happened and all that. And that's what you can expect all weekend: podcasts recapping and talking about everything the Browns have done. So again, for Andrew and I, we appreciate you being here very much and making this a part of your day whenever you found it. And join us at the OBR tonight, YouTube and Twitch, where we will be live for the first round. Hang out with us. So again, thanks, guys. Be well. Go Browns.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each four-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour four-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.